Page 234. In the New Testament, if you've got a Bible like mine. Otherwise, Ephesians chapter 1. Now, we left Gideon whining last Sunday. I may get back to him or not. I don't know. Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ by the will of God. Apostle means sent one. Sent of Jesus Christ for the will of God to the saints. The Greek letter Alpha, if it has the reverse mark above it, you give the harsh guttural sound, Hagios, like Khomeini or Khomeini. To start out, you probably come closer if you cough when you say it. Hagios. That's the word. Doesn't have a thing in the world to do. This is not an illustration of the saints in my church. Not a thing in the world to do with holy living, righteousness, as we normally think. It has solely to do with an offering being placed onto an altar and turned loose of. Well, you saint something when it's a liturgical word. Word used exclusively in worship, which, as you well know, is a contraction of two English words, worth-ship. Because of the worth-ship of the deity that's the focus of the religious action, you offer, thereby, to make a word up, sainting that offering. You turn loose of it. That's Saint Handkerchief all of a sudden. If it is offered exclusively to the deity out of a heartfelt understanding of the worth of the deity, and this is offered as a testimonial of that worth. Thus, sainthood has to do with commitment, not perfection. Now, the church through the centuries has been making saints out of people that have been dead long enough that you can't argue with them when you say they're perfect. You can sort of rewrite the history, lifting out the good parts, finding the bad parts, and burying them. You know how long I'd have to be dead before that could be done for me? You'd have to nuke the world, and some space freak would dig up my remains with no evidence of any kind to be able to make a saint by that definition out of Gene Scott. But believe it or not, I'm a saint by the biblical definition. We have been rewriting the language of God's book for so many years, and as Jesus said, we make void the Word of God by our traditions. It's hard not to get caught up in it. I just said, my church. And the language frame captures us
bends our mind, and you have to fight against it all the time. You know what church is? Church comes from kurios in the Greek. Lord is what they called it. The New Testament Christians were designated by the world looking on, kuriakon, which means the Lord's, which became Scottish word for church, kirk, German word for church, Latvian word, and so on, Kirken, Scandinavian languages. All this is a cognate word carried over into the English, and with the original harsh sound like the word character, we had kirsch, or church, as we've softened it through the centuries, just a cognate of that word, which means the Lord's. I mean, there's only one person in history could speak of my church. Yeah, we do it all the time. Because we've turned around and made the church our possession. When by definition and in its root meaning, the church is a people that belong to the Lord. Same as our word ecclesiastical. Ecclesiastical comes from ek, kla, zia, three words in the Greek. Out, called, ones. It's a people called out according to His purposes. In every case, it's a people who belong to the Lord or are called forth or out. Yet we turn it around and it becomes ours. Likewise, saints. Sainthood becomes an object that we strive for if we work hard enough and long enough and memorize the do's and memorize the don'ts. We arrive as saints. That's not what the word means. There's another Greek word that always crops out in words for righteousness. Dike. It'll be at the root of every word for justification, justify, right, or righteous, but it is never synonymous with hagios, which is translated holiness and translated saint, and is also the word that is the root of separation to God because it's given over to Him, which bases or is the basis for sanctification. Get it straight. We are not called. For the impossible to make ourselves perfect through the effort of the daily checklist, thou shalt and thou shalt not. That's what the whole Old Testament was about. Now, you've already figured out I'm on some basics today, that every so often I have to bring us back to grips with to keep your brain and mine on track from the constant dinning of the traditionalists who still bend our mind into the frame of reference, you're a Christian if you do this and don't do that. That isn't what Christianity is. We're not called to a list of do's and don'ts. That's what the Old Testament was designed to prove couldn't be done. What was Satan's word to Adam and Eve? Take it as a myth, take it as reality, which I do. God won't keep His word. He said, you eat this tree, you'll die. Now, what's the fundamental meaning of the tree? Well, it starts out, let's everybody cough, come on. One. Twice. Three times. Now, one more time to get it all out. Feel better now? For starters, the tree was in the garden because God just wanted to let everybody know He had a right to say no. You can have everything here, including dominion over the whole earth that I've created. You're made boss. Just remember, the big boss said no right here. And that's all he had to, that's the only point he had to make. God will not turn loose of His ultimate right to power. His right to say, this four and no further. Now, you've heard me preach these 14 years. The ultimate essence of godness is not love, in spite of what the hippies tell us. God is not God because He's love. We're lucky that He's a loving God. But that attribute doesn't make Him God. What makes Him God?
Power.
The devil had more power than God, he'd be God. Thank God, God's a loving God. But that isn't what makes Him God. That's the old Puritan concept. God must have certain attributes, and if He measures up to those attributes, we'll accept Him as God. Thank God, He's not like me and you. Thank God He has certain traits revealed in His book. Faithfulness, and love, and willingness to extend grace. But the essence of godness, if He exists at all, is He's the boss. Every year I preach on the potter's house. Right?
Yes, sir.
What's the message of the potter's house? Shall the clay talk back to the potter and say, what are you making now today? Or you put that cookie cutter on me. Let's talk this over. That's the trait about God I hate the most. He's the boss. That's why I became agnostic. Get rid of Him. And I stumbled over that rock. Who moved the stone? And you know the story, and Easter Sunday as we move downtown will be my 15th rendition of why I came back to faith. Captured by the evidence of the resurrection. Once I cross that hurdle, thank God He is as He is, but He's God. He calls the shots. You got everything, Adam, and you stay away from this tree. Just His right to say no. I tell you, fathers, you don't teach this to your kids, despite all the modern psychology. You've got to teach it to them when they get bigger. Once in a while, you say to him, sit there. Why, Daddy? Because I said to. Just sit there. Oh, the psychologist goes. And look at the generation they've helped us produce. But there was another meaning to that tree. When Satan said, God doesn't mean it, He won't kill you if you eat it. He said something else. He said, you'll be like God. Not only will you not die, you'll be like God. Now, I don't have to deal with the issue, who told the truth, just go across the street. Everybody's been dying since they ate that first bite. There's a deeper spiritual meaning. Drummond defined life as capacity to relate to one's environment. And God is the source of life. Separated Himself from them. Put a wall of partition between. And in that instant, like a golf cart unplugged from the source of its life, man and mankind begin to die. And only God could restore the relationship. But Satan's other lie was, you eat it, you'll become like God. What was the tree? The tree of the knowledge
of good and evil. The age-old substitute for the way of grace. That if you come to know what's right and what's wrong, good old mankind will do it. And doing it will make you like God. That's as old as the Babylonian concept of Janus. You get up to the gate and they got a scale and they weigh the good and they weigh the bad, and if there's more good than bad, in you go. Reminds me of the story of Ed Masary. Our wonderful attorney. You know that story. Ed got in because I agreed to do penance for him. Remember that? I got to heaven. Peter said, "You're going to make it, but more penance." I said, "Why?" He said, "Ed Masary." I said, "What?" He led up the ugliest thing you've ever seen in your life. So you've got to live with her 1,000 years. For Ed, hope he's listening right now. I'll teach him not to be here on Sunday morning. He said he's going to be here. Ed? Yeah, Ed. "What I've come this for," so I take the old... And I look down the street, and Ed's tripping along with the prettiest little thing you ever saw. And I said, "I got to do this for 1,000 years to get him in." And he gets that. And Peter said, "Shh, that's her penance." Hi, Ed. In other words, you make it in by works. Paul, the only man who understood the Old Testament, said it was all a schoolmaster held up, an oracle people to whom God would give his standard of righteousness by direct revelation on Mount Sinai. No equivocation of the standard, and the law was more than the Ten Commandments. All that was designed to do was to demonstrate you could hand out the knowledge of good and evil direct from the hand of God through a mediator, Moses. And all that it would do would create a sense of sin, because man would understand, having seen the Old Testament, that man's best effort still falls short. Hamartia is the word in the Greek. And all, Paul concludes in analyzing the Old Testament, all have shortfallen. An inch is as good as a mile. The issue is not horizontal comparison of how close you get, like horseshoes, to the standard of God's righteousness, which is the themis, if you want the Greek word. Intruding into history, the word will always be utilizing the word dike. When it comes into history and God's nature finds an outlet on the stage of history, as it did in the standard of the law, which says thou shalt and thou shalt not, and there's nothing wrong with the law, it's very good. It is an expression of God's rightness, the themis of God finding an outlet on the stage of history. But the facts are, all it does, by clarifying the standard right, is to teach you that all mankind, the best of us and the weakest of us, hamartia, fall short. You can be a deacon in the Baptist church till you die. You can take the standard of God, lay it down, and stand in the courts of heaven and bellow, "Look for yourself, God. I've done better than anybody else in the whole history of mankind." This is as good as a mile. That deacon still hamartia. Fall short. All have sinned. The word is hamartia. Simply means fall short. I listen to a self-styled atheist who was formerly a fundamentalist, which tells me how smart he was to start out with, on TV the other day, saying, now that he's seen the light, there is no such thing as sin. Ignorant fool, didn't even know what the word meant. I mean, he never fell short in anything in his life. I could probably drop his trousers and disprove that. Just wanted to wake you up. You won't hear that from Jerry Falwell's pulpit. So much idiocy peddled around. If that's all you remember about this message when I'm done, all have come short of the glory of God. All have shortfallen and come short of, he goes on to say, the glory of God. Hebrews 1 tells us what the glory of God is. The outraying, as from a light, a ray shines, the outraying of God's nature. Same principle. The nature of God finding an outlet on the stage of history. Only once did it find an outlet. John says, the Word that was with God to tell us all we need to know about God was of the same essence as God, struck a tent in human flesh, moved in. And that light, which was the outraying, Hebrews 1 has seven characteristics. The proof coin of God's image, struck in human flesh. The outraying of God's nature, shining forth. John 1, He moved into a tent of human flesh, and though no man has seen God, Christ hath declared Him. The word is exegesis. I've demonstrated this before. It means to come from behind a curtain and put on display. Though no man has seen God, Christ led Him forth in a tent of human flesh and put Him on the stage of history. And let us once for all see what that standard looked like, stamped in human flesh, and that's the only person on the stage of history that ever reached the standard and didn't fall short. Every other fleshly life, the best of us and the worst of us, have fallen short and come short of the glory of God. None that doeth good. And that knowledge of God's standard drives us to the position, who shall deliver me, Romans 7, from the body of this death? And Paul peels it out. I thank God, through Christ, who broke the wall of petition, and for something other than perfection, gives to us His perfection, gives to us His life, gives to us His covering, His grace, and it is that other thing, faith, which Satan seeks to snatch away. He can't keep you from coming to God. He's going to twist your view. In the battle of the church, from Jesus to Paul to Luther to now, is to keep us on focus, where we quit trying to imitate righteousness, reproducing by our effort God's nature, which always falls short. Instead, what God wants is saints, not righteous imitators. Saints who offer themselves to God for His work. That's something we can do. Commitment. A vessel offered for God to use. What's the other thing we're called to do?
Well, that much time on one word? Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ for the will of God, to the saints, the offered ones, literally, and to the, what is it?
Faithful.
That's where that's the message. To the offered ones. I've been 25 minutes on this introduction. To the offered ones and to the faithful. Not the righteous. He knows we're not righteous. Paul knows that better than anybody. Paul's the one who said, I'm chiefest of sinners. Of course, the traditionalists would say he's lying. Think about that for a minute. He's either lying or stupid. So why should we listen to him in either case? Paul said of himself, I'm the chiefest of sinners. And the traditionalists have to say, oh no, he didn't mean that. Not Paul. We've made a saint of our definition out of him instead of letting him give us the wondrous testimony of sainthood by his definition and recipient of God's grace instead of emulator of perfection. Every generation the church gets off on this one subject. We're saved by faith, not by works. And we're called to be saints, offered, saints, offered ones, who are faithful. Faith. Now, we went through this last Sunday as we do every Sunday. What's faith? Act, based upon belief, sustained in confidence, God will keep His word. That's all faith is. Find the promise. You know the difference between a promise and a rule, don't you? Find a promise that fits your need. I got a lot of them today. I got a priest on them. But find the promise that fits your need. Look every circumstance in the eye that defies it. Grab hold of it and say, if I die hanging on to this, God's word's forever settled in heaven. Now, I will hang on that which formed these worlds rather than release my grip on that by the pressure of the worlds that were formed thereby. That's all faith is. At times I still feel a total failure as pastor of this church at the inability to stem the tide of tradition and convince once for all we're saved by faith, not of works, lest any man should boast. I frustrate not the grace of God. For if righteousness came by my works, then Christ is dead in vain. Christ is formed in your heart by faith. The righteous by faith shall live. I could go on for 2 hours. But, yes. But show me your faith and I'll show you my works. Dear old nincompoop James. The tradition says wouldn't take a bath till he died. The theory you defend the Lord, put something on that was wrong. Leave the dirt, that was right. Dear old James, who prided himself with calluses on his knees and praying in the temple, who 19 years after, 19 years after Christ had died and rose, and he of whom there is no evidence, he ever became a disciple of Christ throughout Christ's lifetime. But because of a tenuous claim of relative, God delivers from relatives, was made head of the Church of Jerusalem. Dear old James, who pastored the first church of Jerusalem that died. They were so proud of being poor, they named themselves the poor. The Ebionite Church means the poor. Dear old James, who 19 years after the church was formed and Christ was raised, the Pharisees still thought they could bring him out and he would tell the Jews, and they respected him, that Christ was not the Messiah. 19 years in the city, they still thought he would not believe that Christ was the Messiah. Paul spends one day in the city and they cause a riot. That's the difference between them. Dear old James, who absolutely misquotes the story of Rahab and absolutely misquotes the story of Abraham offering Isaac. You don't believe that? I haven't got time to tell you today. Buy the tape. I don't know what the number is. The name of it is James the Jerk. Dear old James, who at the council, when they came down from Antioch, and said there's Gentiles up there saved that aren't circumcised, that Paul to the Galatians says, you know, I take my poor new convert down here to the brethren who added nothing to my stature at Jerusalem. And while we're in the John, I mean, this is the Gene Scott Revised Standard Version, but it's exactly what's happened. It's a little more delicate in the King James. While we were in the John, brethren sneak in unawares to spy on our privacy, to take us into bondage upon the discovery that my new convert has not had part of his flesh whacked off. And James says, they can't be saved. And Paul took them to task. So they had the first church council, recorded in Acts 16. And James couldn't defeat Paul in his exegesis, so he compromised, as if righteousness is something you compromise. He says, okay, Peter, you stay with the Jews, and for them to be saved, they've got to be circumcised. And Paul, you go to the Gentiles. Just when you get there, when you think about money, remember the poor, which was the name of his church. He didn't mean the poor generally. The poor was the name of his church. Ebionites is the word in the original. They don't have to be circumcised, but I'm going to meet you halfway. They've got to keep the kosher rules of about five chapters of Leviticus. If I can't lay it all on you, I'm going to lay this much. Paul went away from there steaming and wrote the Galatian letter and said, I received from the Lord, and if an angel, much less one of the brethren of Jerusalem, but an angel come preaching any doctrine other than this. Literally, if you want the translation, let him be goddamned. King James cleans it up. Let him be accursed. Again I say, Paul said to the Galatians, their angel come preaching anything different than this wonderful grace and peace of God that flows from God and the salvation that was purchased with Christ's own blood. And by faith you're saved and taken as though you were Christ because of that trusting relationship. If an angel come preaching, much less James the Jerk, let him be accursed. As he tattles on them for their peep and Tom behavior. I mean, you've been in churches all your life where some old bun on the back of her head, saints peeping on you all the time. Huh? Any of you ever been there? Thank God most of my congregation is ex-heathen. But how many of you ever been in church like that? Remember the young people got saved? You went to Idaho and preached, Dad? Told them about the grace of God, about 30. Young people come to God. You leave town next week. The old saint that's dominated, third cousin of yours, I think. Well, I hate relatives. I'm a genetic miracle. I came from their genes with nothing preceding it. Nothing. None of their ancestors are my relatives. None of their relatives are mine. Hate relatives. You mean you hate relatives? Yeah, I hate them all. Every one of them. Hate them all. That's awful. That's what I'm preaching to you. I'm still a saint. Still a saint. What have I to do with that? What have I to do with that? You ever going to get delivered from that? Well, I don't know. If I am, it'll be the Spirit of God deliver me, because I don't even want to be delivered. How come we can't tell whether you're serious or not? You don't have to. Just listen to the serious part. God's Word. Sainthood's offering yourself in faith. God provides the perfection which is His life. Which is, we offer ourselves to Him as the container. He, by His grace, offers His life into us. You become a new creation in Christ Jesus. And God's Spirit staying in you, which is maintained by a continued life of faith, is going to change you, man. I've warned you. I've said, you don't have to change when you come here. But I also told you, you start practicing faith. Look out. You're going to change. How many of you didn't believe you'd be changed as much as you are? Let me see your hand. See? Well, I warned you. Didn't I? Faith strikes the connection. God puts His life in you, even though you may not be yet delivered from hating all relatives. James. Good old James. Whose writing didn't even get into the canon until the 5th century. Whose writing Luther condemned as saying it's a right, I quote him exactly, the great reformer, it's a right strawy little epistle. There ain't one, he didn't say ain't, there's not one word of gospel in it. Plus the fact that after tolerating, he wrote to the 12 tribes of Israel. Still in a legalistic frame. All the Old Testament teaches is you cannot, by knowing good and evil, and by striving to emulate, make it. You're not called to be imitators of the law. You are called to be saints, offering yourself 100%. Paul said, in that He died for all, that they which live should not henceforth live unto themselves, but unto Him that died for them and rose again. I got a lot of faults. Any relatives listening to me today could really give you a list. Now that I've angered them. But my worst enemies don't question my faith. And I doubt seriously if they've looked at my life that they question my willingness at the drop of a hat to take a one-way ticket anywhere in this world that I feel my Lord is calling. Faithfulness, faith, ability to trust His Word, and the ultimate trusting act, put your life in His hands. Psalm 37 says, commit your way unto Him. Roll it over. Acknowledge Him in all thy ways. Start out when you leave this place and every day hereafter. I offer myself to God in the steps of a good man or ordered to the Lord. Whatever tomorrow's mess is, He put it in your path and He'll take you through it. That's the life of faith. Well, that's easy. What's what you think? It's different. It's not easy. It's different from traditional Christianity. Traditional Christianity is easy. You got a checklist. Well, here's my holy list. If I can't make it today, I'll find a church with a shorter list. Eventually, I can be very self-righteous. I found a list that's reduced down to my size. Now, like the Pharisee, I thank my God I'm not like this publican, Scott, who has to get up every morning and cry, Lord, be merciful to me, a sinner. But whose life is in God's hands. Now these called saints and faithful ones, second chapter says, there was a wall of petition between them and God because of sin. And that wall was broken down. Broken by what Christ did at Calvary. And we don't break through to God He broke through by removing the barrier to us, and the second chapter ends with the wondrous affirmation. We have become the habitation of God through the Spirit. As the life of God tented in human flesh called Jesus of Nazareth, for the act of faith, God gives us a piece of Himself, though it distorts to so quantify, but the point may be made in the distortion. He gives us a piece of Himself. And the reason the resurrection is so important, if I can believe He pierced that rock and sailed off, I can believe the substance of His life, though I don't see it, comes to dwell. Why, I'll say I'm the only one that really believes as a television preacher in a born-again experience. I believe new life comes into you. The moment you begin to faith and take God at His Word and offer yourself at His disposal, His life comes in and we become little tents into which the creative energy life of God is moved. And if it stays around, and this is the mistake of Christianity, they then reach down and try to pull it out. Faith put God there. Faith keeps God there. You go left, in other words, to get right. The paradox of Christianity, as Jesus would preach, you go up by going down, you become first by being last, you become chief by being minister, you live by dying. You become a Christian not by working at Christianizing yourself, you faith and God Christianizes you. Paradoxical truth. God's life in you will change you as though you were carrying radioactive material around. And God's life comes in you by acts of faith in God's Word and by maintained acts of faith. Period. The petition is broken. He now comes to make us the habitation. Paul prays in the next two chapters. We might come to know the height, the depth, the breadth of God's love to us that are sainted and faithful, offered and trusting. Try to comprehend the rarity of those in this life who unequivocally offer themselves trustingly to God. And Paul prays we might understand and comprehend the height, depth, and breadth of His love. He then tells of the Domata in the next chapter. God gave some apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers. The definite article in the Greek separates the ministry functions. God gave some, it's not in the English, but in the Greek, the apostles, sent ones, the prophets, foretellers, the evangelists, tellers of the good news, the pastors and teachers, shepherds and teachers, one office. If you can't teach, you shouldn't be a pastor. They're a combined audience. They're a combined office. If I'm a teacher and you're the shepherd, the teacher will ultimately shape the direction of the flock. That's why God put the offices together. God gave these domatas, the word in the Greek. You can't train for it. You can augment the calling. It's God's gift to the church. God gave some. That's why Satan has populated the seats of ministry with so many that have self-anointed themselves. A man's gift maketh room for it. You know the minute you lay a straight stick alongside a crooked one, you know the difference. There's sight to see light. And there are those that the moment they open their mouth, you see what has always been there all along, but you wonder why I didn't see it. God's gift to the church. And they're given to perfect, teleos. There's several words in the Greek for perfection. This one means to bring to completion, to complete the saints, to the purpose of your calling. And that's why I say to you over and over again, you pay where you eat. That's God's assignment. You find the ministry that opens vistas to you. You don't have to hear 1,000 false shepherds to recognize the right sound when you hear it. And God gave some apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers for the perfecting of the saints, to the work of the ministry, to we all come to the unity of the faith, to an understanding of the perfect man, which is knowledge of Christ. Till we all come to the fullness of the measure of the stature of Christ. Then we come to the tough part. That's wonderful. All I got to do is offer myself. Trust. Petition's removed. God's life comes in. His life will change me. I've got domatas, gifts from God, to help me complete the purpose of God in me and an understanding of the nature of this new life so I can recognize it as it begins to flower. And remember, spirituality in the New Testament is fruit. The fruit of the Spirit. The word spirituality means the expressions of the Spirit. It's God being Himself through us. It's that life that has come like the graft on the old trunk of a black walnut tree, left there and taking, will change the very nature of the tree. And you don't shake the tree to say, become an English walnut. If the life is there, the change begins to occur. That's what Christianity in behavior is. It's the outgrowth of God's nature in us. Not a rubber stamp put on by the bellowing outside voices of a Jerry Falwell or a Jimmy Swaggart that says, do this, do this, do this, do this. Don't do some of the things. Some of them do. It's fruition of a life of sin. Well, that's all easy then. And we should try to comprehend the love of God. What a rosy utopia Christianity is. Why ever ask the questions of Gideon? Close the book right there. And we'll do a Channel 40 dance. Wonderful! I can send you home now, and Christianity is a utopian dream. You can all say, I want it. There. Climb on the altar I go. You get to this part. Sixth chapter. Finally, my brethren, all preachers get to a finally eventually. And I'm to it. Finally, my brethren, and I got exactly 11 minutes to stay within the hour. For my finally, you got all the good news? Isn't that wonderful? Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against, what is it? The wiles of the devil. Old-fashioned doctrine. You really believe in the devil? I mean, I've met him a lot more than I have the Lord in the early years of my Christian experience. I found him to have a church, just like Jesus found him in the synagogue. Heard the story of some guys going to catch the old drunk that came a certain way to the graveyard every night. Dressed up like the devil, jumped out to scare this old guy. He's staggering down to the graveyard. Kid dressed up like the devil jumped out and... drunk was like, who are you? He says, I'm the devil. Well, he said, pleased to meet you. I married your sister. We get so used to the devil's jokes and concepts, we reduce him down to a size that's no longer terrifying. You all know the story in the book of Daniel. Daniel has stood the test of time with prophecies of world history. But he's praying. Angel Gabriel appears. Said he heard his prayer 3 weeks earlier. But it took him 3 weeks to battle the satanic princes that withstood him in Persia
3 weeks to fight through those demonic forces. And he still wouldn't have made it if Michael hadn't come to help him. You say, you believe that? I sure do. Now, these are pretty tough angels. These angels, in another case, kill 180,000 Sennacherib soldiers in one night. And yet, demon force is so powerful, this angel couldn't bring the answer to Daniel's prayer without fighting through him for 3 weeks. Read through the book of Mark, that little short gospel you can read in one afternoon. Everywhere Jesus went, starting with the synagogue, he found devils. Well, the Greek is daimons. There's one devil and several demons, understudies. God created this earth, gave it to man. Man gave it over to the devil, and he's the prince of the power of power of the air. In the book of Revelation, when God finally turns Michael loose, that same Michael, that the book of Jude says, when Moses died, Michael and Satan contested for the body of Moses, and Michael dared not accuse him. That same Lucifer who appeared in the councils of heaven to challenge Job in that Old Testament book of temptation. In the book of Revelation, before the end, Michael will be turned loose, it says, and will cast him out of the heavenlies and limit his fear just to this earth, and all hell breaks loose as he sees his last domain before he's grabbed and cast into the bottomless pit for 1,000 years, then released for a short season, the book of Revelation says, and ultimately put into the lake of fire thereafter. These demons are everywhere. They don't bother people that haven't become sainted, faithful ones. You're part of his neutral zone or his prison camp. It's only when you break free that you become a target. That's why I was telling you last Sunday, if you're going to become a Christian, let somebody tell you what's going to really happen when you become a Christian. All the good things I just told you. Eternal life as a gift. But at the same time, the present enmity of Satan and his forces. I did a PhD at Stanford. I'm not some weirdo. I just happen to believe from the authority of God's book and the record of Christ, whose authority is established on the resurrection, that there's a host of demons out there, principalities and powers, that we have to stand against the wiles of the devil for. Listen, I'm afraid too many of the saints in my church don't believe this. That's why I'm on this morning. For, I thought you were going to finish Gideon. I am. But I want you to hear an old Bible story of a guy in a wine press that got a host of people to fight and say, well, now, isn't that interesting, like you're sitting in some theater watching a play? I want to finish Gideon in the context of an audience that understands we're surrounded by an equal force, nay, a much worse force, who wants to annihilate us the moment we become responsive to the call to sainthood and faithfulness. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take unto yourself the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Stand, therefore. I continue to have people, I'm going to be even closer to home. I continue to have voices out of my own human frailty say, why do we never get a break? Why is it that every forward step that can bring joy is matched with a new assemblage of evil.
Why is it we are constantly a target no matter what? Here's why. We won't bow to the norm of this world. If you were of the world, cosmos is the Greek word, that means the way the world views things, and the way the world is in submission to the devil and his plan, which centers himself. If you were of the world would love its own. But you're not of the world because I've chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. Recognize the true enemy, the master chessman. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. So what are we supposed to do? Remember a few... Look, I think Jim Baker was a crook. Not as bad a crook as they said he was, but he is a crook. I nailed him on television 13 years before anybody else did. But I preach a gospel that says you can always start over. The last strikeout can set you up to start over for the next victory. How many of you remember the message I preached long before the 45-year sentence came down, in which I pointed to Jim Baker as an illustration, it don't pay to quit. How many remember that? I've been telling you, and I'm trying to be a faithful pastor, and that's why I'm on these subjects. As we make this move downtown the next 75 days, we're going to stir up the devil and his forces in ways we cannot conceive. He managed to take every great church out of the heart of this city, the communications capital of the world. Whatever is done in Los Angeles affects the world. And as we make our steps now to plant the flag of faith and sainthood properly understood, and take to that great avenue of Broadway the wondrous message of salvation by grace in response to faith as the gift of God without all the falderal attached. Remember, Satan's not omniscient. He has to be told what we're going to do. He can't read our mind. Don't anybody tell you that. He knows what we're going to do now. He's forewarned. I've decided. I've driven the stake. We're going Easter Sunday. For better or worse, we're going. I don't need to hold it. I haven't got time. I've only got 2 minutes. He's not omnipotent. Unlike God, he does not have full power. He's got limited forces, more than I can handle, but not more than God can handle. He assembles. He's a strategist. I mean, why would he pull his best troops to some little congregation of 14 that's scratching itself this morning in its self-righteousness and mutually applauding one another as they get up and thank God they're not like everybody else? We are going to seize from his jaws what he had already chewed up and swallowed. We're going to reach down his neck and pull out the life of God in the heart of this city. You think he isn't going to react? Well, I tell you, you ought to fill this place till the walls break. I forgive you because you're a California wimphood. If it rains, you think the end of the world's coming. But you watching me ought to have, if I could, I'd reach through that camera, grab you by the throat, shake you till your false teeth fall out, and the other ones that are good get loose. I mean, I've been over there so many times with this congregation, I'm tired of your wimpiness. I'm tired of telling you what a faith for God's going to do to you. I'm tired of explaining. Either get out and go find some wimp church uptown that you can preen yourself every day and say how wonderful you are, or get in this trench and fight with me as we take the light of God into this city and say never again will it be uprooted. Get on your feet.
tired of wind. War is being declared. Well, I'm out of time. I've had attacks come the last couple of weeks. Biggest problem I see is the time it's going to take. What are you going to do? Fight! And having done all, therefore stand. I want a church full of Christians that when they die from their Satan's darts, your feet are pointing up, not your rear. You got it?
Yes, sir.
Offering time.